It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 174. I am your host, Adam Mangum. First up, Darnell Dixon of the Daily Herald. He comes on to chat about football signing day and maybe some of the immediate impact players, as well as the struggles with hoops and the awesomeness of Kyle Collinsworth. Matt and I then talk about Spider-Man. We talk about the upgrades coming for the Marriott Center and the new practice facility for basketball. We also talk about signing day and whether we think it was good, bad, or maybe neither. And then, of course, more Kyle Collinsworth and triple-double talk. Once again, this is the Rise and Shout podcast. Catch us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. Catch great coverage of the Cougars at loyalcougars.com and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the Rise and Shout podcast, Darnell Dixon of the Daily Herald, and maybe the only man on the planet who refers to me as Shecky.
Shecky. That's a great nickname. You can't deny that.
It's true. It is a great nickname. Go Google it for the younger folks to understand what that might mean. But
yeah, it is a little dated. Yeah,
it's a little dated, but that's all right. So last time we had you on a couple months ago, and we're having you back on different sport, different season. But I sent out for tweet bag questions, and of course, Jerem Jordan. If I don't invite him on the podcast, he has to find a way to get in on the podcast anyway. And he asks, who is your favorite BYU Sports Nation host? Which do you want to say what your response to Jerem on Twitter was?
Well, I was just kind of taking the high road there because I chose his wife Whitney, who I know when she was working at BYU, she was a volleyball SID, and that's how they met. But I don't want to choose between those two guys. They're both a barrel of fun. I've known Jerem a little longer, so he probably expects me to choose him.
Yeah. He's asked us to choose as well, my brother and I, and we have also punted.
Wise choice, wise choice.
Yes. So let's start off with signing day. It's 10 days later, a chance to kind of think about it holistically and have a chance to absorb it. As you look back on this signing day, are there players that you think are going to every year there are going to be players that impact the program, but are there those kind of big difference makers? And what I mean for is for next year, or is like most years, we're really talking about like 2017 or 2018 before this class really has a massive impact on the program?
Yeah, taking a look at the group, there's maybe a couple of guys that will contribute next year. I think Charles West has a possibility to play a little bit, the running back from Texas. He's got great wheels and stronger than he looks from the clips that I've seen. And you never can have too many running backs as we saw last year. Also, Eric Takanaka, the defensive back from Snow, he might be pressed into service early because the defensive backfield is going to need some work there. And the other guy that I'm hearing a lot about is Tavita Moonga from Murrieta, California, or San Diego, defensive lineman. I hear he's really, really good. And I think they're pretty settled at most of the defensive line spots. But if he can put those 300 pounds to good use and play a little nose tackle for BYU, that would benefit them to have a little more depth there. So those are three of the guys that I think might get an opportunity to play early. But it's really hard to know. I mean, you're talking about kids coming into the college level and getting, what, 3-4 weeks to learn everything and get – that's very, very difficult, and very few freshmen can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we look a little farther out to the folks that may, redshirt or go on missions and such, who are the names do you think 4 or 5 years from now we're going to be looking back and saying, were those are the guys that where Broncos staff really, really found some gems?
Yeah, it's so tough to pull that out. I love what Bo Hodge has done at Kentucky. I mean, that I found out a little bit about that program, Highlands High School out there in Fort Thomas. They're a powerhouse program, and this was his first year as the starting varsity quarterback, and he had a tremendous year, not just running the ball but throwing it. And I talked to one of the guys that covers that high school football out there in that area, and he said, Bo Hodge can make all the throws, very, very strong arm. So I think there's a lot of potential there. And I don't know if Bo's going to, you know, he'll probably redshirt 1 year, but he might get an opportunity in the fall to show a little bit about what he's got and learn from Taysom Hill and maybe incorporate some of the things that he does into what Bo can do. But I like him. And also Micah Simon is a guy that played quarterback in high school. Seems pretty versatile, pretty fast. And, you know, I think BYU's pretty set at receiver. But if he is patient, he'll get his opportunities too. So and you have to look at some of the offensive linemen. I mean, I think that there's several that are going to be pretty good. Kiefer Longson has a good pedigree. I think he's somebody that can help them down the road. And a couple of guys from Texas on the offensive line that, you know, those guys play great football out there in Texas. So we saw what happened last year when they brought in their freshman kid, the center. Tell me his name again. Sorry, I'm off football right now. I'm trying to remember. The big center. Anyway, the guy with the big, humongous arms. Anyway.
Yes.
Freshman All-American, so you know it's an opportunity for those guys to step up and learn, and they never can have too many good offensive linemen either. So I think those guys are the ones that I look at right now.
So the interesting part about the recruiting class is the person that made the most noise nationally, as far as there were some headlines, was of course 6'7", 410-pound Motakaya Lange. I'm sure I'm butchering as usual. Yeah. The Polynesian name there, but he makes the big noise. And again, this is a kid that hadn't really played a lot of football either. You know, what do you think the chances are? I mean, he's obviously huge. The pictures of him, he looks muscled, if you can call a 400-pound person that. And I definitely would do his face, only call him muscled and nothing else. But I mean, what are the chances of somebody that size being able to really contribute? I mean, there's not much precedence for someone that large making a lot of impact at the collegiate level. There are a few, but it's pretty rare at that size.
Yeah, it is pretty rare, but I think Ronco Mendenhall, when we talked to him on our signing day, was really intrigued with the opportunity to try to develop this kid into somebody. Yeah. He said he's got to play somewhere at that size and that strength and that quickness of feet. You know, I think BYU's kind of done it before. You know, they've had the guy that came in, and why am I whiffing on names tonight? I really am. Detroit Lions defensive end. Because he wasn't
Ziggy, here when he was Ziggy Ansah.
So they've kind of been really, really raw. And as long as they're willing to work, I think there's a good precedent for him to learn and for Bronco to I wouldn't expect him to really contribute for a couple of years at least after he gets back. I mean, even Ziggy didn't even start until he was a senior. So I wouldn't expect a lot from him to begin with. But, you know, what I found was interesting about the whole situation was that BYU, in its attempt to find every single player that possibly could play for BYU, sent coaches to the islands. Not just Tonga, but Samoa and Fiji and just all these islands. And Bronco said they blew a lot of their recruiting budget getting coaches out
right,
there
right.
to look for every single player that could possibly play. And that this is who they turned out was big Mo Lange. So it's a great opportunity for him. And I think it shows that BYU figured out it needs to look every single place it can to try to find good players.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned Bo Hodge, and one of the things we had a colleague of yours, Brandon Gurney, on several weeks ago, and as we were talking about the quarterback position, and I asked him about what's the backup plan for Taysom Hill, and Brandon's response was there really isn't a backup plan for Taysom Hill next year. You know, and obviously Christian Stewart did a very admirable job last season, better than I think most of us believed he would do, but I mean, depending on how fall camp breaks out, there's a possibility that Bo Hodge or Tanner Mangum are the backups, or at least not the backup in a blowout, but the backup if Taysom were to get injured again and miss significant time. Do you think that's likely, or do you think, no, if Taysom goes down, it's going to be McCoy Hill or somebody else not named Hodge or Mangum?
I would think you'd have to give McCoy Hill just initially the big look because he's got more experience in the program. And we'll get a chance to see him in spring because he's going to take a lot of reps
right.
as Taysom comes back from that injury. I saw McCoy Hill play in high school when he was at Jordan High. Strong arm kid, very big and strong, was hard to bring down. wasn't, I don't think he's nearly as fast as Taysom, but has the ability to escape and get around and pick up yards out of the offense. And again, a great opportunity for him this spring to show what he can do. But,
right.
Yeah, I don't think there's a backup plan if Taysom goes down. They're crossing their fingers and hoping that Taysom doesn't get hurt again, because that would put them in an awkward situation. Now, certainly they love Tanner Mangum. They think he's going to be a great quarterback. But as we've seen in the past, pressing a guy into service his freshman year just off a mission isn't necessarily the best thing that you can do. Or even a kid that's just out of high school, either way.
Right.
Very few freshman quarterbacks can step in and play that right away. And so I hope that Taysom Hill is healthy, and that, to me, would make sense to make McCoy Hill your backup, give Tanner a chance to get back in the program, get strong, get in shape, and then really compete for that job next spring. But, you know, as we saw last year, a quarterback situation, you never know what's going to happen. And I sure hope that Taysom's going to be healthy and that they're going to run the offense to the point where he's not putting himself in bad positions. And some of that's his own fault. He's just so competitive and wants every play to get yardage. And that's where, you know, the game he got hurt, the play he got hurt, he was trying to make something out of nothing. There was a play where he wasn't able to get many yards. He tried to scramble around a guy. He grabbed him. He fell awkwardly. And, you know, you can't prevent that. But, yeah, the quarterback situation is pretty much really up in the air, and we're not going to get much solved until fall when we see how well Taysom has recovered.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's shift to basketball. It's been a tough couple weeks for the men's basketball team. Went from looking like a team that was destined to be in the tournament to now having a needing a win or two against Gonzaga between now and March to make it. What do you make of this season? Obviously, injuries have been a part of it, but, I mean, the injuries, you know, you can only blame that for so much. Defense has also been a problem, 55 points given up in the second half against Pepperdine last week. So what do you make of this season? Is this one of those weird seasons? Do they just not have enough depth behind the three or four really good players? What has made this season go from what looked like at the beginning a tournament run to now it looks like, well, NIT may be the best they can hope for?
You mentioned injuries, and while you don't want to blame everything on them, you can't discount the fact they've missed a lot of game time and crucial guys, and they were counting on Jamal Yates to come in and play some low post for them, give them some scoring, and certainly Nate Austin was being counted on to play some defense in the post, and they've really, really lacked defensively in the post. Now, I think that recently Corbin Cafusi's played pretty well in the post. He's staying out of foul trouble for the most part. He's blocking shots and rebounding. I think he's starting to get it a little bit. He's really going to be challenged on Thursday against St. Mary's. You know, that big guy they've got in Brad Waldo, he's maybe the best big guy in the West. He's just a great big true post player, and he can hit threes too, so you really have to pay attention to him. I think the biggest problem for BYU this year has been the post defense and the lack of offense out of the post. I'm not as concerned about that because they've had teams that have been definitely guard-centric and the post don't score a lot of points. But defensively, boy, they've just been worked by teams and by middling to average players that are having career games against BYU because they aren't handling their business in the post. So I think that has to stop if they want to go on a run here. And I kind of kept expecting them to go on one because Dave Rose teams tend to do that at the end of the season. They tend to go win 7, 8, 9 in a row, and they just haven't done it. And they still have an opportunity to win 4 or 5 in a row and try to get into the West Coast Conference tournament with a little bit of momentum. But I think you're right. They have to beat Gonzaga at least once to really show that they're going to be an NCAA tournament team. Without those, I just don't see it. I don't see that they're going to get in. It's going to be really, really difficult on that selection Sunday if they're going to be sitting around waiting for an at-large bid.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, if you looked at Dave Rose, you talk about the runs that his teams often go on late in the season. One of the things he's said in his press conferences is he's still looking for a solution in the post. You know, and this is way late in the season to still be looking for that. Do you see this as just one of those years where, as a coach, this is a challenge that he just doesn't have the players to fill? Or do you think there is on the roster potentially the right rotation of big men to make that kind of run?
Well, the best big man they've got is serving a mission right now.
Right.
Fortunately, you know, Eric Mika was a guy that was really developing, and I feel like, you know, when you look at the football team, I'll make this parallel. The coaches told us all summer and all fall camp, we've got great depth, we've got great young players. Well, when those young players got in, they made mistakes, and they didn't play as well as maybe the coaches thought they would. And Bronco Mendenhall admitted to us later in the season that maybe they overestimated how good some of those guys were going to be right off the bat. And maybe that some of that's taken place here with the basketball team. Now, sure, we know Nate Austin wasn't going to be much of an offensive threat, but he was going to get majority of the minutes in the post. And then they'd work in Nielsen, they'd work in Worthington, they'd work in Kafusi, because he's just playing basketball for the first time since he was in high school, and that's like 4 years ago. And those guys have been pressed into service early. Now, as much as I like Luke Worthington as a kid, he's a nice kid and he's smart, he really didn't produce for them in that starting role. And to produce, I mean, grab a rebound or two, you know, block a shot or two, get a loose ball or two. He just didn't seem to be in the flow. And then they tried Nielsen, and he showed that he can hit an outside shot, but then he was kind of lost on the inside defensively. Then they turned to Corbin, and Corbin has the most athletic ability probably of all of them, and he's still learning how that defense is played at this level. So, Dave Rose has been searching for a guy to step up, and they recruit these guys because they think they're going to be ready. And certainly Nielsen was a guy who had been in the program for a whole year before he played, because he transferred in, or right, he came back to position and was with the program all last year. So I think that maybe they thought guys would be ready, and they kind of weren't. Now they're starting to be a little bit better, but it is late in the season. It's time.
Yeah. So let's the thing that's interesting about the season at this point is breaking of records. So Tyler Hawes is on verge of passing. Jimmer is the all-time leading scorer. And then you've got Mr. Triple-Double, Kyle Collinsworth, filling stat sheets like, frankly, no one has in the history of college basketball, as he breaks the single season record. Let's start with Tyler Hawes. He's going to break Jimmer's record, barring some catastrophic injury. What do you make of his season so far? I kind of look at it and I go, he's doing exactly what he was supposed to do. It's just the team around him isn't quite as good as maybe some of the teams he's been on in the past.
Yeah, there might be a little criticism in his end-of-game performance. He's had a couple of looks at some shots that might have made a difference here or there. But when you're getting pretty much 22 points a game every single time, I mean, every night, and you know the other teams are game-planning for him. This is how you keep him from coming off the screen. You force him out here. You don't let him pull up here. And nobody can stop him. He still gets his 20 to 25 points every night. That's terrific. And I think that what gets lost a little bit is, since BYU's not having a great season, people don't really appreciate, I think, Tyler as much as they appreciated Jimmer, because they were winning 30 games and going to the Sweet 16.
Right.
This team's not going to do that, and so I don't know if Tyler will get that recognition. But if you think about the past three seasons he's had since coming back from a mission, averaging 20 points a game three straight years, it's pretty phenomenal. And he's a great leader and a great kid, works hard. I think he's got some potential to play maybe professionally overseas, perhaps. Maybe he finds an NBA team that likes a guy that can stick jumper. I don't know. But, he definitely has been an awesome player for BYU, and they just haven't had enough help for him.
Yeah, and then you look over at Kyle Collinsworth, who's junior, still has a year left after this, but 11 months removed from knee surgery, looked a little bit like he had lost a step because of the surgery at the beginning of the year. He's a little slow starting off, limited his minutes, and then he kind of took off. And now he's on an incredible run that's kind of unprecedented, certainly in BYU history, maybe in college basketball history. Same kind of question about Collinsworth. He's having this tremendous individual season. And in the triple-double games, typically those are games that BYU wins. You know, Dave Rose said, well, we shouldn't need a triple-double from Collinsworth to win every game. But I'm kind of thinking maybe you actually do this year need, maybe not a triple-double, but that kind of, you know, 16.9 assists, 8 rebound game from him. Or otherwise, maybe the Cougars just can't keep up with top 60, top 75 type of teams.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, we talked to Kyle a lot about the triple-doubles, and he says, you know, I can kind of control scoring and I can go after rebounds. He says, assists are kind of out of my control.
Right.
If you think about maybe some of the shots that have been missed, maybe he'd be averaging 15 assists a game.
Right.
He really does a good job of getting people the ball where they like to have it. You know, what's interesting about Kyle is I've known him since he was 14 years old playing, you know, varsity at Provo High. And I wondered after watching his high school career, would he be able to do the same thing at the college level? Because he was 6'6 in high school, and he's dominating these 6'1", 6'2" inch guards by going to the basket, powering through them, and scoring the ball that way. And I just didn't know if that would translate to the college level. Well, it has, because he's gotten better at it and because of his just general court sense. He gets the rebound and he goes, and guys just know, fill the lane, he'll get you the ball.
Right.
He's done that very well, and he's got really good shooters around him. You know, we talk about BYU preparing, for Brad Waldo or whoever the other team's best player is. BYU's got to be a nightmare to prepare for, too. They're averaging 86 points a game. You know, you have to know, hey, we got to hold them down below 80 points or we're not going to win it. And so, you know, you've got Chase Fisher that can hit the three. A lot of guys come in and shoot the ball. Dave Rose's his rotation has been very different lately. He's been trying a lot of different guys in different spots. So BYU's tough to guard against. But, you know, with Kyle able to do this at this level, who's to say he can't do it at the next level? Maybe he does become an NBA player who kind of is a jack of all trades. He's made his free throws this year, which is something that he needed to improve. Between his junior and senior year, he's going to have to work on that jump shot. I don't think he's hit a jump shot in about a month. I mean, everything he gets is going hard to the basket and free throws. He needs to be able to shoot like that if he wants to move on to the next level. And he's the kind of guy that'll work on it until he gets it right. But you look at those two players, Tyler Haws and Kyle Collinsworth, as two of the best that have ever come through Provo, and they may not get the NCAA tournament this year, which is a shame. But they still have the opportunity. I wrote that the other day in our one-on-one with that we put in the Daily Herald with Jared Lloyd, that they control their own destiny. They really do. If they could beat St. Mary's on Thursday, and if they can handle their business in the tournament and beat Gonzaga, and Gonzaga's not unbeatable. We've seen close games against West Coast Conference teams so far this year. If BYU plays well, they could get a victory, and then they could get themselves into the tournament. They have that opportunity. It's not easy, but they could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Darnell, thanks for joining the podcast. Great conversation on football and hoops. And, of course, we will recommend everybody go out to the Daily Herald and read your coverage. You and Jared Lloyd do an excellent job there covering the Cougars, and we'll definitely have you on again sometime soon.
Thanks. Have a good night.
Rise and Shout podcast, Matt. What's up?
I am rising and shouting, my friend.
You are rising. You are... Well, please don't shout. You'll hurt the listeners' ears.
Okay. I will refrain from the shout.
I appreciate that. So, Matt, big world-breaking news, like massive news that we need to discuss.
Is this about Kanye trying to interrupt Beck when he was accepting the Grammy for Best Album of the Year?
By the way, I don't watch those award shows. They bore me. But when I read the whole story, I'm like, does he know that Beck is actually a legitimate musician?
He's probably never listened to any of Beck's music.
I'm just sitting there like, and Beck like writes his music, doesn't just perform it.
Plays a ton of instruments.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't heard this last Beck album. I was a Beck fan back in the day.
Same here.
But I understand that on this album, he actually played all of the instruments.
Yes. So I like Beck, and I don't like Kanye West. So, I mean, I'm a little jaded on that perspective. But, no, that's not the big news, man.
Oh, okay.
That's the little news. That's news in, like, little print, 10-point font. In the 50-point font is Spider-Man is joining the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Is your mind blown?
Kind of, but maybe not in the way that you think it is.
Okay. As a non-geek, do you care?
How many movies are we going to put Spider-Man in?
Well, he's been in 5.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, have you seen Amazing Spider-Man 2?
No.
It was actually pretty good.
Okay.
What they don't need to do is tell his origin story anymore. Him and Batman both. You don't need to show Uncle Ben getting killed and saying, with great power comes great responsibility. And you don't need to show Bruce Wayne's parents getting killed. We get it. Everybody gets it. You can just like, it's like James Bond. You have to like show the, James Bond. Every movie have to show how James Bond became a spy. No, it's James Bond. He's a spy. It's the same way Spider-Man should be. It's Spider-Man. He's got Spider-Man powers. Put him into a movie. Let's go. You don't really care, do you?
I'm not as excited about the Spider-Man add-in as you are.
So the reason I'm excited, Matt, is in recent comics and cartoons, one of the great things they've done with Spider-Man, as opposed with the Avengers, is you have this teenage kid who's this wise, cracking, not really sure what he's doing as a superhero, and then you've got like Iron Man and Thor and Captain America, and it provides some awesome comic relief. Because of that, you know, you basically have a teenager who's part of the Avengers. But that being said, I'm just excited because right now the Marvel Cinematic Universe people, Joss Whedon and others, they really can't, they can do no wrong. They can do no wrong.
You're pretty, that's a pretty long leash.
Well, right now they haven't had, they have yet to have a movie that was a disappointment compared to expectations. Financially. And I don't think Avengers Age of Ultron is going to be the one that disappoints. I'm just excited, Matt. I'm excited. You are not as excited. So we are going to move on. Because
I'll tell you what I could get excited about.
What's that?
More Batman movies or Bourne movies?
Well, you've heard about the new, that Matt Damon's coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is also exciting. I was disappointed. I thought it'd be cool if Jeremy Renner's character and the Matt Damon, Jason Bourne character could be in the same movie and like spend the first half of it as like thinking that they're enemies, and then the second half like fighting some really awesome bad guy. But apparently that's not what they're going to do. But still, Matt Damon coming back as Bourne, sign me up. I'll be there opening night.
I can't not watch those movies anytime they come on.
I can't either. And even the one with Jeremy Renner was pretty good. It wasn't as good, but...
It wasn't as good, but it was good.
Yeah.
And I'll watch it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's funny, when we were going to sit down and watch that one, Kathleen thought it was a solo Hawkeye movie.
He kind of... All the facial expressions are still there.
Yeah. They're kind of the same. He just didn't have arrows and a bow.
No. Did he at one point? No, I guess not.
No, but that the best part of that movie is actually the opening where he's being tracked by the wolves.
Yes.
That actually is pretty phenomenal. And anytime you do like those third world city chases, they're fantastic.
Yeah, they are awesome.
They're absolutely fantastic. All right. So, Matt, let's go straight into Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
All right. Dave Rose signs a 5-year extension. I assume, Matt, that you are not a moron and that you are not against this signing of this extension. Am I correct?
Long live Dave Rose.
Yes. So there's been a little Twitter talk about maybe Dave Rose has peaked or whatever.
Oh,
shut up. Just like delete your Twitter accounts and go home because
pretty strong language.
It's stupid. The guy took the, you know, he has been the most successful BYU basketball coach ever. And there are people, one rough season that were below expectations, and it's time to run the guy out of the house. I mean,
he hasn't won a national championship yet. Get him out.
He's had
plenty of time to get there. Get him out.
Yeah, he's only recruited the best recruiting classes BYU has ever had. Get rid of him. Get rid of him. He doesn't know how to coach defense. It's all been ever since Rice left. Whatever. Just stupidity. So I'm excited that Rose is signing a 5-year contract. What also is showing BYU's commitment to the basketball program, upgrades, new practice facility, Matt, and upgrades to the Marriott Center. These are very, like, last few years, this is very un-BYU-like, right? They're spending a lot of cash on the sports. Shows a lot of commitment.
I don't know. I think they're getting ready to get rid of sports.
Well, yeah, I know. That's another one of those. Well, you know, my cousin has a general authority in their ward, and they said that BYU may not have sports in 2020. I don't think so. I do not think so.
Also, I don't know what you're going to use the Marriott Center annex for if there's not a basketball team to practice in it.
Intramurals.
Okay.
Some talent competitions.
I'll tell you what, the upgrades inside the Marriott Center, that stuff looks sweet.
It does look sweet. And I think it sounds like the capacity is going to come down a few thousand, which I think is great.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know, the Marriott Center is cavernous by college basketball standards. Sometimes when, you know, you and I have talked about this on the podcast before, but when you watch the volleyball games at the Smith Fieldhouse, sometimes I'm jealous that they don't do basketball games there. I know the capacity is too small, but can you imagine?
Oh.
Be awesome.
Well, we'd fit in and more in the WCC that way.
Well, no, we'd still have the largest stadium, the largest largest.
But the bands, I mean, just right on top of you in there.
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
That's awesome.
Also, Matt, and we got some tweet back questions, what I'll get you to in a second here, but more games with Arizona. You excited?
I guess. It's only good if we beat them. I can't stand Arizona.
I know, I can't either. But Matt, here's a question. So the Irish Mexican, that's at Bullishism on Twitter, he says, ACC now considers BYU a Power 5 opponent. If all conferences adopt a rule of playing 1+ Power 5 opponent, which ones will include BYU? Well, I think we know the answer, right? I think Pac-12 certainly will, right?
Right.
Because they've basically made us their scheduling buddy for those November rivalry games that are outside of conference. What do you think about the Big 12? If they adopted that rule, don't you think they'd...
I think the Big 12 would.
Though I think Texas would vote against it.
Hey-o!
Shots fired. But yeah, I think, quite frankly, the Big 10 might as well. I think the SEC might be the ones that kind of hang out there. But I don't know. His next question, Matt, is a good one. Second part of that is, if all of these power conferences were to include BYU as an indie alternative to a Power 5 opponent, will we be in quotations N?
I mean, well, what do you mean by N, right?
I think what he's saying is, are you basically a Power 5 team if every conference considers you an out-of-conference Power 5 opponent?
Yes.
Yes. I think at that point, if every conference designated that way, I think Holmo and company would have a lot of ammo to walk up to the National College Football Playoff and NCAA and demand better access.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because you've been validated. I mean, it's already kind of happening with our semi scheduling arrangement with the Pac-12 and now with the ACC, and obviously we've humiliated Texas a couple times recently. So I mean, it's kind of already there, but I think that would make it even stronger.
And one of the things, though, that maybe that would help, or maybe if we could work out these deals a little bit differently, maybe that helps with the Power 5, with the P5 designation. But you know, when you look at you started this out with the Arizona games, right? So two out of three games here are being played in, quote, neutral locations, right?
Yes.
One in Glendale, which, come on, like, I understand it's not Tucson, but it's not Salt Lake. And then the one in Vegas. I think that I'd like to see us get away from that type of a model going forward. And I think that maybe getting recognized as a P5 school, I don't know, is that a double-edged sword? Does that, you know, give us the credibility to say, no, you're going to play a game in Provo and a game at home.
Right.
Or does that designation make teams less likely to want to come and play in Provo?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think in the end, what we saw this year with Baylor and TCU is, I think you're going to have to play teams like BYU on the road.
Yep.
If you have national championship aspirations, you cannot have, I mean, the committee was very clear this year. If you have a lousy out of conference schedule and no out of conference road games that are of any consequence, you're going to be going against, say, a Michigan let's say we pick on Michigan, Harbaugh turns it around or whatever, and they play us in a few years in Provo or something, you know, you look at that and you go, huh, that's a good game. And Baylor played Long Beach State? I mean, I'm making that up, right? But I hear what you're saying, but I think people will still schedule BYU in Provo. I still think, though, there's going to unfortunately be too many of those two for one deals with some of the bigger programs.
Well, in that situation for the 2-for-1, I'd rather have a neutral site game, even if it's like this Glendale example, than a 2-for-1.
Same here. I'd rather do like a 3 package where you got a neutral and a home and home. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you there. So Matt, that's Cougars in the good news. Let's talk signing day.
Yeah.
So,
it was a pretty big day.
Yes, it was a very big day. Mo Longhi, 6'7", 410 pounds. And let's say the pictures of him where he's with a guy that's like 6'5 and 290, and he makes him look like me standing next to a guy that's 290. He is a very big human being.
Yeah, he's a large man. He's a full-grown man.
Yes, and I think...
I hope he's full-grown. Holy smokes.
I have to think when he tracks, people are going to either definitely let him in or just not answer the door.
Their question is going to be, where did the sun go?
So Matt, we had a tweet bag question from Jared Oldman that's at... CBCKIDAT. Anyway, he's on Twitter, Jared Oldman. He asks, which new or returning missionary player will be in the starting lineup this fall? So, Matt, I'll start. I think that one of the new defensive backs could be, and I'm talking one of the true freshmen, or transfers could be there. What about you?
I was leaning towards one of the defensive backs as well. I'd love to see Squally Canada get in.
Yeah, he can't play this year though.
But yeah, it's not going to work. And he's got we've got a running back already. But look at a guy like Eric Takenaka coming out of Snow.
Yep.
I think has a shot at getting in there and making an impact.
Yeah, I think Takenaka may be the most likely to be in the starting lineup.
Yeah. That's probably where I would go.
But impact-wise, Darnell Dixon, who was on earlier in the podcast, he mentioned Charles West, the true freshman running back out of Texas, as not a starter, but an impact player. And obviously, as last year showed, you definitely need depth at that position. Another name that everyone knows, but I'm a little surprised. I did not know he was coming and hadn't really caught this up. Coy Detmer Jr. is going to walk on, a priority walk on, or however they call him. What was your thought when you saw that? At first, I was like, Coy Detmer Jr., well, his dad didn't go to BYU, but what are your thoughts on Coy Detmer Jr.?
I think it's an interesting get. I'm not trying to be down on the guy or anything, but, you know, it's hard to get really excited about somebody who the coaches have evaluated as a priority walk-on.
Right. Well, and the problem for him...
Sometimes there's other situations that kind of dictate that, but, yeah.
Yeah, if you look at the quarterback pipeline, so Taysom Hill is obviously the 2015 guy, okay? So let's go to 2016. Assuming that Bo Hodge and Tanner Mangum both redshirt, mm-hmm. in 2015, you will
right,
have
so Hill stays healthy in your scenario.
Yes, Hill will have to stay healthy in my scenario. I don't know, maybe McCoy Hill could fill in, but yes, in my scenario, Hill stays healthy in 2015. Okay,
so wait, then I don't want. I know this isn't the point you're getting to, but if if Taysom Hill gets hurt, you know, Hodge or Mangum are losing their redshirt year.
Yes, but I think McCoy Hill depends on what part of the season. So say say Hill goes down in the first game of the season, and oh my gosh, that just made me throw up in my mouth.
But I don't want to think about it.
So I think McCoy Hill would get several games, right? He'll have played spring ball. He'll actually, I think, be the only quarterback playing spring ball. He'll play spring ball. You know, he's a big dude. And obviously, Tanner coming straight off a mission and Bo coming, you know, straight out of high school. But yes, by the end of the year, if Taysom Hill is hurt, one of those two, I believe, is under center. Okay, so 2016, assuming Taysom Hill stays healthy and we win a national championship, you heard it. That's what I just said. Tanner Mangum, McCoy Hill as a junior, Bo Hodge as a redshirt freshman, Tanner as a redshirt freshman, and then you get then you also have, you know, Hunter Moore, Coy Detmer and Hayden Griffiths. No, I guess he would be on his mission if he ends up coming. The point is, if you're Coy Detmer, a lot of things would have to happen for you to ever even get a snap with the pipeline that exists now. Because in theory, you'd be the same if he redshirts this year. He'd be the same class as Bo Hodge and Tanner Mangum, and he would need a lot of things to happen. So
do you, if you're him, I mean, do you think about switching positions?
He's 5'10", 160. What's he going to switch to? Kicker? I mean, that's a small dude, right?
I don't know.
I think he's the type. I mean, I think he's a Christian Stewart guy, right? He sits in the program. By the way, Tanner Mangum and Bo Hodge are not going to both do 4 years at BYU. Unless there's injuries and going back and forth. One of them's going to leave, right? If they're both that good, one of them is going to lose the quarterback competition, going to get frustrated, and it's going to leave, right? I mean, that's typically with these better recruits how it kind of works. And, you know, somebody's going to win it, somebody's going to lose it, which means there could be a situation like there was last year where all of a sudden there's none of the top flight guys behind the starting quarterback, and all of a sudden it's Coy Detmer who's there just because he's stuck in the program and knows the system, you know?
Right.
But that being said, there's not much chance he takes a meaningful snap for BYU. Not much chance. Not much chance. Other than that, Matt, we'll move on to the overall rankings. So, Matt, 24/7 Sports had us at 59 out of the 130 teams. ESPN had us at 50th. Rivals had us at 65th. These are fairly typical for BYU classes as far as the rankings goes. Do you care what these services say about our class?
No.
Do you think this is an above average class, a below average class, an average class? How do you put it versus what Bronco's done in the past?
I will say this: I'm not one to typically get too fired up about a recruiting class, but sure, I find myself very intrigued by a number of players on this list.
Yes.
You know, not just because one of them is 6'7" and 410 pounds. A lean 410 pounds.
Yes, a lean. Yes, absolutely.
I guess Bronco said that wasn't the right word. But he's quick on his feet.
He's quick on his feet.
I think there's some real intriguing players in here. I think there are some guys in here that could do some really special things. And for whatever reason, I think I've been caught up more in the who are these players? You know, let's looking up the highlight reels, reading about these guys and those types of things than I have in past years. So that it feels to me like this is a more exciting class than we've seen. Does that mean that, you know, that Bronco's getting better at recruiting, or does it just mean that BYU's getting better at marketing their recruits? I think that when we get into some of the rankings, that marketing piece becomes a bigger factor than a lot of people want to realize.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at what was the national story about BYU's recruiting class? Mo Lange, right?
Right.
Because he's 410 pounds. But the real get in the recruiting class was Longson, you know, who's a top flight recruit and offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. So you look at that and you say, you know, that's the noise that came on was that. But, you know, there's, you know, when all is said and done, Lange may be the story of this class. I don't know.
Only if he turns into a Ziggy Ansah story.
Yes.
But when you look at a guy like Longson, I mean, he's recruited by Utah, UCLA, ASU, Colorado, Florida State, Missouri. I mean, Ohio State.
Yeah,
and I think that's big news, especially when you look at the segment of fans that complain so much about, oh, we can't get any good players to come to BYU, Bronco has no personality, can't get, you know, and all of that. I mean, this is a serious get.
Oh, yeah, and he's one of those guys that seem to be on for BYU no matter what, but you mentioned Utah, so I saw a lot on Twitter, we lost the recruiting battle to Utah, and we did lose some individual battles, right, to the University of Utah. You look at the recruiting rankings, which, again, you and I are both skeptical of. Utah was ahead of us in a few of them and behind us in a few of them. We were basically, if you took an average, about the same. So when I hear people say, oh, my gosh, Utah is such a better recruiting class, I look at theirs and I look at ours and I go, nah, it's probably about the same. You know, we lost a few people that were names and people knew. But let's remember, some of the best BYU players of the last 5 years, nobody cared about when they were being recruited, right?
Yep.
Let's not get too revved up about one or two guys that decided to go someplace else.
I will say this, you know, more so than the competition between BYU and Utah for recruits, because I think you make a really good point. As far as caliber of athlete is concerned, we're going after the same guys. The thing that concerns me, we're going after and we're going to get the same basic caliber of athlete.
Right.
I believe.
Sure.
The thing that I think we all need to keep a close eye on going forward is, where are the best football players in the state of Utah going? Are they leaving the state? And that is, when we get to that point, I think that's something that could cause a great deal of concern, is when the best players in the Utah backyard don't have Utah and BYU among the top schools on their list.
Yes, agreed. And as you can see from this class, I mean, a lot of kids from Texas. California was there, but maybe not as much as some past classes. And, of course, Utah, there's quite a few. You know, heck, we got a guy from Tooele, for heaven's sakes. I mean, who's not excited about a signee from Thule?
Thule.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. So let's move on to hoops, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Collinsworth, by the way, in case you didn't know this, he is really good.
Yeah.
So
he's a stat machine.
So he sets the record, single season record, for most triple doubles in a year. Okay. Triple doubles are very hard to get in college, 40-minute games. And such, then he's only one away from the career. Now, if I had told you at the beginning of the year that Kyle Collinsworth, not his brother, that would be a lot less probable, that was going to potentially break a record held by Shaquille O'Neal, what would you have thought?
I'd want to know what that obscure record might be.
Yes. How many shots did he have to block in that particular game?
I'm hoping it's not going to be missed free throws.
Well, last year, maybe, with Collinsworth, but he's gotten a lot better at shooting free throws.
Number of eyebrow raises in nationwide commercials. Mm. Not nationwide the brand, but commercials that air nationwide, such as Icy Hot or Buick.
Yes, or Gold.
Gold Bond.
Gold Bond medicated powder. I have to say, I always thought this when I was younger, and obviously the ship sailed on this basically the day I was born, but if I ever became a professional athlete and then retired, you don't do Advil, you don't do, you know, anything that has medicated in the title.
Why? You do where, listen, So. I'm a professional athlete and I retire. Do you know what commercials I'll do?
Whoever
the ones
gives
that
you the
pay
money.
The ones that pay money, baby.
Alright.
What do you care? What does he care?
What does he? That's the entire point. He's got all that money. Why is he doing commercials?
Because he's kind of funny in them. I mean, he's no Peyton Manning, but.
Well, yeah, that's true. He's not like he's not the awkward bromance of Peyton Manning and Papa John.
And Joe, when you put Joe Montana into that mix, and now it's just like now it's just all sorts of awkward.
Yeah, it was great to see Joe Montana in two terrible commercials. So.
I think it's, and they can't put Joe Montana in a 49ers jersey or a Chiefs jersey, like, so he's just wearing a red shirt with a 16 on it.
Right,
it's just,
it's absolutely fantastic in that one with him and all the Heisman Trophy winners where they're giving him a hard time and then he raises his hand and he's got his Super Bowl
got all the
ring.
Rings on him. That's actually a pretty funny commercial.
That is actually pretty clever. My favorite of that series was actually Bo Jackson psyching out Doug Flutie to go get him a drink.
No, it's Herschel Walker.
Herschel Walker, not Bo Jackson. Yes, Herschel
right.
Walker.
I think Bo Jackson's on the couch.
Yes, Bo Jackson.
But Herschel
on the couch,
Walker
right.
is the one who does the what is it? Mental strength.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
And basically just psychs out Flutie, and Flutie's like, oh, okay. Anyway, so Kyle Collinsworth is awesome. He's putting up these numbers now. Dave Rose says he hopes he doesn't have to do a triple double in order for BYU to be competitive. Matt, news for Dave Rose. He needs to get near a triple-double for BYU to be competitive.
And you know what? That's like Shaquille O'Neal getting into whatever commercial will pay him money. You know what, Coach Rose? Just ride it. Just go with it. Just go with it, man. This is what this team needs to be successful right now.
Yes.
You know? Then let's just roll with it.
So, Matt, what's the recipe if BYU can upset Gonzaga here in a little bit? And let's just assume they got to win at St. Mary's in Provo. We're recording this on Wednesday night, so Thursday night. What's the recipe to beat Gonzaga for the Cougs? Because they're going to have to beat them at least once and probably twice to get into the tournament at this point.
Yeah, you know, I'm not even sure. You know, if I knew the answer to that question, I'd be putting my resume in for when they fire Dave Rose.
Well, that's happening soon, according to Twitter.
Twitter. He's going to get Twitter fired.
And that's the best part is I blame it like on all of Twitter when it's we're really talking about like 2% of the BYU fans on Twitter, right?
Right. It's and just maybe, those that 2% of fans, they have like a billion tweets.
Yes, and 40% of the guys on Cougar Board. But
don't
anyway.
Let's not even get started on Cougar.
So anyway, he what's they were talking about? Oh, the recipe. Yes. So here's your recipe. You need a near triple double from Collinsworth.
Mm-hmm.
You need somebody to just slow Waldo down a little bit, and it's probably his name is Corbin Kaufusi.
Okay? See, and I don't know who that person is. You think it's Kaufusi, but I was going to say you need that. You need somebody to play that role, and I'm not sure who it is.
I don't know either, but then you need Haas to do Haas things, which he typically will anyway, right? He's going to get his points. And then you need Fisher and Halford and Winder. You need two of the three of those guys to be knocking down open jumpers.
And the thing is, you need all of those things to happen together.
Oh, yes. It's an improbable thing, a BYU beating Gonzaga. They're an excellent team. But, you know, you start looking at BYU's resume, right, for the tournament. And now, Matt, it's time for our tournament temperature check. All right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I just got a snort out of my wife who thinks that the title of this segment is ridiculous. Awesome. She says that's awesome now.
Did she just make an appearance on the podcast?
Yeah, I think that's her first appearance. Say hi, Kathleen. She waved her hand. She doesn't want to be on it. So right now their RPI is 67. Not good. As a bubble team, their quality wins, so versus the top 50 of the RPI, are Stanford and UMass, okay? No wins versus the top 25 RPI. After that, their best win looks like Long Beach State, okay? Not good. Losses, now the quality losses, I'll call them, San Diego State, Utah, and Gonzaga. That's not bad, right? Then the losses that are kind of head-scratchers, but you're okay with Purdue and St. Mary's, okay? then the big, this is the whole thing, is the three losses in conference against Pepperdine twice and San Diego. That is the difference between making the tournament and not. You reverse those three games, and all of a sudden the resume looks a lot different. Obviously, you can't reverse those three games.
Not until we invent time travel.
Well, and that Pepperdine loss last week, 55 points to Pepperdine in the second half.
I don't have any words.
No, the defense was not there, obviously. And the offense wasn't great, but it was good enough to have beat Pepperdine that night. But not if you're going to give up 55 points in a second half. So, Matt, where are you on that temperature check? Are you, like, ice cold? Like,
I'm ice cold.
You can't even get a temperature out of you?
I could get pretty comfortable, like you said, but without those three games. I could get comfortable. But those three games, I mean, that's the nail in the coffin.
Yeah. I mean, our record...
I mean, you're in a deep freeze at this point.
Record versus the RPI top 100, according to ESPN, is 3-5. And then you've got those losses against Pepperdine, which, you know, is their RPI is 137. But that loss at San Diego's not a good team, right? That's Pepperdine isn't that great of a team either. But man, that is not great. So we both are very cold. So percent chance they run the table in Las Vegas and win the conference tournament?
9.
I was going to say 10. And we may be being a little optimistic, to be honest.
When I said 9, I was speaking German.
9. Oh, were you? 0?
No. Oh, I'll give them 9%. I mean, there's always a chance, right? I mean, there's even a 1 in a million chance.
Are you saying there's a chance? Actually, today I was corrected. I was talking to some younger coworkers, and I said the difference between millennials and younger Gen Xers is your ability to quote the movie Dumb and Dumber, and they could all quote from Dumb and Dumber. So
it's
need
a timeless classic.
I need a new barometer. I don't know. That kind of blew my world. What I will say is, people in their 20s are less likely to have seen Star Wars, which I just find sad. Very sad. But anyway, there's not much chance of them getting into the tournament this year. I think the people going, they're not even going to make the NIT, just stop it. Don't be dumb. You know, they're going to make the NIT barring an absolute collapse down the stretch. But, I mean, the goal's not the NIT, right? Why are we arguing about the NIT? I don't really
care. No, the NIT is a giant consolation round.
Yes.
And frankly, if you don't get it, I could get over not getting into the NIT. You know, some people look at that like, oh, that's insult to injury. That's lemon juice on the paper cut or whatever you want to call it.
Not really.
Like, you know what? I could take it or leave it.
The only thing is, when the season ends, the only reason the NIT has any value to me is getting to see Haas play a couple more times, hopefully.
Well, and for some, and it gives Rose a chance to work with some of the players a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
There are some pluses to the games, but yeah, it's whatever.
Okay, Matt. Big question as we finish off the podcast today: will you be watching the Cricket World Cup?
No.
Pool play has begun.
Pool play has started. Oh, I'm already behind.
Yeah, you're already behind. You better catch up.
What am I gonna do?
New Zealand and Sri Lanka on Friday.
I know a lot of people who are into cricket.
Yes.
And I don't get it.
No, I was taken in business school, taken to watch it at an Indian bar in West Lafayette, Indiana. And he was from Pakistan, and it was Pakistan versus India. And
huge match.
Massively big. We actually had to leave for safety reasons after the first wicked googly. I don't know. I'm just making that up. I don't even know the terminology.
The first flammer jammer?
Yeah. because the the Pakistani team was winning and the Indians were getting very angry with my friend. So no, I don't really. I just saw the banner ad for it on ESPN. I just thought that was funny. So Matt,
I feel like I want to get into that just because it's so wildly popular.
Yeah, it's wildly popular in like six countries.
Yeah, but it is a big deal.
Well, and one of those countries, India, and it's like that's a couple billion people or whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in that one country.
Yes, yes. So I've heard.
But I feel like if I'm going to jump on to the big international phenomenon, I feel like I should probably get into soccer before I get into cricket.
It's called football, not soccer.
Football.
But yes, you probably should. You probably should. So Matt, any last thoughts before we sign off?
Everybody, just relax.
Yeah, relax.
Yeah, Patriots like won the Super Bowl. Everything's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I've kind of stayed away from that, the Patriots winning the Super Bowl, because basically everyone hates us. And despite the fact that it's very clear now that the Patriots did not cheat with the whole deflating of footballs, it's still like everyone is like just assumes the Patriots did.
Right.
But the more you read about the story, if you go out and Google what's being written now.
Oh, it's crazy now.
I knew something was up when Robert Kraft got in front of, I mean, he never stood up for Belichick with the whole spying thing, right?
Right.
He actually kind of sounded very disappointed that it had happened, right? When he got up and basically said, everyone's going to owe us some massive apologies, including the NFL.
That's when you know he knows.
I'm like, he knows something we don't know, which is they don't have anything. And not only that, the whole 11 out of 12 footballs being under was not actually true.
Isn't even the case.
It wasn't factually correct. It got reported, and ESPN, I've yet to see ESPN print a retraction to say we're really sorry, we were way off. We took a source's word for it, and we were wrong. You know, but that's the thing with all of this stuff, Matt, is like...
There's no accountability for this.
No, none. And, you know, some of the reporting that goes on around, you know, the NCAA in general and the infractions and other stuff is so poor. And you get these sports writers, they're getting outside of their comfort zone and venturing into legal territory and other things. But anyway, I am happy about the Patriots winning the Super Bowl, even though I didn't get to watch it because I was in a hotel room in Spain.
That's too bad.
Yeah, but you know.
The ending of that game kind of blew my mind.
I would have probably lost 6 months off of my life had I watched that live.
I'll tell you this, and I won't dwell on it too much, but I'm watching the game. It's my son and I. We're both wearing our Tom Brady jerseys. The Seahawks are coming down the field, and I feel like they're about to score.
Yes, game over.
And we're both sitting there just kind of, you know, kind of mopey, just like, oh man, like we were, you know, we were this close. And then I'm even having the thoughts like, you know, after the Kansas City loss, I thought this whole season was going to be just a total loss. I'd kind of, you know, and they really turned it around. We should just be happy that this team got here. I mean, it's really quite an achievement. That was what was going on in my head.
So you had thoughts of a loser is what you're saying.
Kind of.
Yeah.
When Malcolm Butler stepped in front of that pass and picked it off, so I lost my mind.
So my favorite part about Tuesday morning quarterbacking, the play call wasn't a mistake. I mean,
oh, sure it was.
No,
the pass got intercepted. The play call was awful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. The play call was not a mistake. The execution was a mistake. If he hits an open wide
system,
receiver.
So what you're saying is the system is perfect? This execution was bad?
Well, let me ask you a question. If a quarterback reads coverage and the coverage is there, whose fault is it, the coach or the quarterback?
It's the quarterback, but let me ask you this question.
Yes.
If you come out of your huddle and the defensive package doesn't give you the matchup you want so that you can hand the football to the best running back in the NFL?
Call a timeout.
You don't call a timeout?
No. You've got one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You trust him to make a good decision. It it happens, man. It's like, you know, all these things where it's basically like, well, they made one of the worst mistakes in Super Bowl history. Give me a break. They didn't make one of the worst mistakes in Super Bowl history.
No. There have been halftime shows that were worse than that.
Oh, yes. Is it the play call I would have made? Probably not. Is it the play call a lot of people would have made? Maybe not. But again, Russell Wilson had not made many mistakes in the playoffs. So you trusted him to make the right call. And by the way, Marshawn Lynch may or may not have gotten the... There's no guarantee.
In that situation, he'd been given the ball, I think, 5 times on the one this season and had only gotten in the end zone once.
You make a call. It's very quick. You make the decision. Yes. In what you said is they may have needed to call a timeout. Maybe. Again, that is an option. But they lost the Super Bowl because, and not even because of that one play, they also gave up their vaunted defense, let Brady a few minutes before march down the field and go ahead, right?
Right, absolutely.
That one play gets magnified because of when it happened. But in the end, it's not the only reason they lost. I hear people, I mean, it's almost like people would just, I mean, they won a Super Bowl last year and they almost came inches away from winning a Super Bowl this year. Like, I'd lay off on the criticism.
They're a pretty good team.
I think their staff knows kind of what they're doing. Go ask a Minnesota Vikings fan if they would like to trade spots with the Seahawks. Pretty sure they'd do that in a heartbeat. Be a big quarterback upgrade from, Teddy Bridgewater, I think, will be fine long term. But anyway,
Teddy Bridgewater's got a future.
We've gone far afield, as usual, Matt, but who cares? It's our podcast. That.
Do whatever we want.
That's right. Well, if you want to tweet at us, of course, it's at @BYU_RiseShout. You can email me, adam@loyalcougars.com, email matt@loyalcougars.com. We should be back again next week to talk about hopefully a couple of hoops victories and headed into the home stretch for the Hoopsters. And I don't know what else we'll talk about, Matt. Maybe more Spider-Man. Because you seem to really love that topic. So I definitely think we should expand on it next time. So, well, thanks everybody for downloading. Thanks for listening. And of course, we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!